To a mind that's still, the whole universe surrenders, wrote the Chinese philosopher Xuanzi around 2500 years ago. We hear the words meditation and enlightenment so often today that one would think that everyone knows exactly what they mean when they use these terms. They were once meant to convey secret practices and higher states of consciousness. Similar to the complex word love, there are many layers of meaning around the words meditation and enlightenment. And this can be confusing to the newcomer when they assume these can be mastered or even purchased on a workshop weekend. Often we mistake meditation for that process of thinking over a matter of importance for a minute or more. However, when we actually practice the receptive and penetrating stillness of awareness, that state that watches how busy our minds are, we realize that it is this silence of receptivity that allows us to think more calmly and more profoundly about anything. Meditation is also sold in the marketplace as a form of relaxation therapy, like biofeedback, or a therapist leading someone through relaxation techniques through guided imagery. However, when we connect with the dimension of our mind that is already still, let's call it the witness or observer, then our ego that is inflated with self-importance is gradually opened and infused with the energy of the kind watcher, the kind listener, and the kind doer. True meditation is the encouragement of our ego to establish a committed relationship to that watching, listening, and doing higher self, our consciousness, that is independent of our ego, yet desires an intimate connection with it. When we learn to live with our higher mind, the chaotic world in which we live shrinks in size. Slowly, we develop a growing awareness of the oceanic ground of consciousness itself, from which everything arises and into which everything merges. One could call this knower, big mind. So what is the use of a guide or a teacher where all this is concerned? And how do we know whether a guide is the authentic article? Anyone with experience should recognize that it's their duty as an outer teacher to connect you with your own inner teacher. Be cautious if anyone sets themselves up as a guru with all the answers to your questions, as if you didn't know the answer already deep within yourself. An outer teacher, at best, can help you navigate a measure of the infinite terrain of big mind, but only at their level of ability, and that ability will vary. I'm reminded of a saying by one of my esteemed mentors many years ago, who told me with a smile, "A student will always receive a teacher they deserve." In ancient schools of higher learning, not only in the Far East but in the West, short or longer periods of silence were considered essential to learning deep truths. It's been said that the ancient Greek mathematician and mystic Pythagoras gave his students an assignment of 5 years silence before introducing them to the deeper mysteries of the soul. From my first day as a novice monk in a Benedictine monastery, it became clear to me that more than the abbot or my novice master, silence was my most consistent and trustworthy teacher. It wasn't the silence of not speaking, but the silence of waiting upon that whispering voice of my soul in the breeze, in the call of a morning dove, or in the quiet reflection of my soul cast by a lake of a thousand little shimmering suns. Don't get me wrong, I also became just as susceptible to my judgment of other monks, my impatience, lust, anger, and even the gluttony of seeking after the pleasures of spiritual practices, rather than becoming a more loving and selfless person. The shadow within ourselves comes flooding in and comes flooding up to the surface when we walk some distance with silence. After a few years of daily commitment to a regular mindfulness practice, I could more clearly see and feel and act upon what I perceived to be profound verities of existence. Not speaking for prescribed lengths of time, however short or long, has tremendous benefits impossible to accurately measure. Silence is a teacher that instructs and reveals its infinite nature immediately, in every moment. The more experience one has with silence, the more profound the teaching. This happens regardless of an outer teacher's words of instruction. In ancient times, the meditative state most probably occurred naturally in every school of learning, from the contemplation of sacred geometrical patterns on the face of earth and in the night sky, to the focused rhythm of the blacksmith's hammer on the anvil, or the stonemason's cutting and shaping of rock. In the East, the science of the inner world has always been highly valued. In the West, on the other hand, the science of the outer world, with its emphasis on modern technology, has been the chief focus. The practice of receptive and active silence is still continued in monasteries and convents around the globe, but it is rare when an educational or business environment, not specifically designated as religious or spiritual, makes meditation, inner centering or mindfulness as it is called today, a priority. You go to one place to exercise your body that might include basic yoga postures, another place to pray, a different building to think, in yet another area, most often a psychotherapist's office, to feel. It's up to the modern individual to put all these faculties together and integrate them somehow into their daily life. Just as meditation is no longer the sole treasure of the recluse and initiated monk, the path of enlightenment is now open as well to anyone who is willing to do the inner work. So what about enlightenment? What does the path to that state of consciousness look like? Well, it starts quite simply by shifting the focus from outside ourselves to inside, without criticism, second-guessing, or getting lost in head trips. Then the training of the mind begins, where we learn to strengthen the faculty of awareness, to put into operation its natural dual dynamic, the receptivity of light and the penetration of that light into the unconscious. As we proceed, we find there are several layers of consciousness. The first layer is the sleep state, that is, when we merge with the unconscious and our body and mind unplug from their responsibilities and refuel through rest. The second layer is the dream state within the unconscious. Here, the realm of our imagination fires actively within our dreams. Wish fulfillments are enacted, and inner dialogue with those fragmented part of ourselves dramatically play out, including those living archetypal energies in the subterranean regions of the psyche that the psychologist Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. The third layer is our ego, or waking state, our organizing consciousness that sees everything in dualities, subject, object, teacher, student, man, woman, child, adult, good, evil, light, dark, etc. Most of us spend our lives within the range of the sleep, dream, or waking states. The fourth layer of consciousness, however, is where meditation, centering, or mindfulness actually happens. This is the practice of concentrating all of your awareness on your breathing, slowly moving beneath thought to a restful stillness. One arrives at the fifth layer of consciousness when we experience the inner witness to the phenomenal world. After training in this non-judgmental and observational practice, we may receive a glimpse, or sometimes a felt sense, of the interrelated web that connects the world of seemingly separate things. This experience of the interconnectedness of reality is the crux of mysticism. Albert Einstein referred to the mystical as the most beautiful emotion, the power of all true art and science, the highest wisdom and most radiant beauty. This knowledge, this feeling is, he wrote, at the center of true religiousness. The sixth layer of consciousness is unveiled after one learns to maintain more elongated periods of oneness consciousness while experiencing the full range of phenomenon. Here, one sees everything as loosely or tightly knotted energy strands weaving in and out of the great flow of oceanic consciousness, rolling hills of energy that appear to have no beginning or end. The seventh layer is one's merging with that infinite consciousness while fully awake, right here in the world upon which we stand. When this state is truly established without a pause or a break, one has attained Buddha or Christ consciousness, a continuous experience of knowledge, power, and bliss called Satchitananda. This unceasing state of infinite consciousness extends into the world of daily activity, influencing its direction. Of course, there are few who have attained this perpetual state of self-realization. A few more may have had a glimpse or a taste of this state. The danger for these is to mistake temporary experiences as the enlightenment state itself. Let's go back a few layers to the fourth state of consciousness. The self-aware person who has discovered their meditative mind has been initiated into the long path toward enlightenment. One might call it the road of wakefulness. Only after countless tests by the curveballs and minefields that occur within ordinary life in the world, after we have cultivated and ripened our meditative mind, will we begin to see more and more by the light of infinite consciousness. Let's now look at some of the essential components of that fourth layer of awareness, which has been called by a number of names: meditation, centering, or mindfulness. The first component has little to do with external postures or breathing techniques, but rather with an internal attitude of openness to transcendence, to some unified field of consciousness that lies beyond the thick veils of the ego. To be open, one can't be filled up with information and self-enclosed concepts, but rather receptive and waiting. We could even call this attitude an in-depth feeling of longing. Longing is the opening of both the mind and the heart, a yearning for the expansion and the unfoldment of our soul in every life experience. Far more important than any technique, the right inner attitude sets up the preconditions for success. Inner success. Now, as far as method is concerned, it is best to adopt an upright posture, sitting in a chair with either the feet on the ground or in any cross-legged position. You have two main choices with the breath. One, you can regulate and circulate the breath by focusing on certain parts of the body, as in nasal breathing, and using the count system for controlling the in-breath and the out-breath, as well as the pauses between the breaths. The second way is to just naturally follow the rise and fall of your breath with your awareness. I sometimes incorporate both techniques, controlled breathing at first to usher myself into wakefulness by connecting my mind with my body in a very direct way, then I use natural breathing once I'm consciously in presence. Whether natural or controlled, the moment we connect our breath with our awareness, we connect with presence. Bringing our awareness to our breath tricks the mischievous kid in our head. Thoughts and emotions are like unruly children. We must first learn to observe them without judgment and catch ourselves when we're taken away by the strength of their assumed importance. When we get good at this, we can begin to label them with names like thinking, feeling, past, or future. Concentrate, but without overexertion. Return to the center, to your breath, whenever you get pulled into schemas. Schemas are patterns of past events that play over and over, or they can even be fantasies that we fear might happen or wish to manifest. Schemas have no real substantive purpose other than to catapult us into attachment or avoidance. So the practice is to always return to the center, to mindful breathing. What is the center? The center is the present moment, what you're doing right now. Just breathe in alignment with an awareness of that simple activity. You can also incorporate the rhythmic repetition of a power word or mantra, either one you've chosen yourself or one that you've been given. A power word is connected to sound and vibration, such as a mantra. A low power word is any word you can think of to assist your centering practice. A high power mantra is given by an advanced teacher to accelerate your awareness. Although many years ago I received such a mantra and received some benefit from it, it's not necessary. Deepak Chopra, once a student of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the TM movement, offers an objective approach to the reception of a personal mantra by plugging in your birth date. You can go to allgoodfound.com if you wish to take this route. But the point is that we need to really prepare ourselves in order to contain the high-voltage energy of wholeness. A word about drugs and their ability to convey higher consciousness states. Even those not produced in a chemical laboratory, like marijuana or peyote, are not generally considered a healthy aid to meditation by most, if not all, genuine masters of higher consciousness states. Even Ram Dass's teacher, Neem Karoli Baba, cautioned his student against it, for good reason. Drugs tend to divert consciousness through the brain's intense production of images, sounds, and sensations that are at most convincing shadows of reality, yet still tied to what might be called the hard illusion, similar to a circus parade through town, a movie, TV show, or stage play. Everything is really illusion until we've arrived at the identification of our small mind with big mind. We start off in our bodies with the hard illusion and work our way through less dense or soft versions of illusion, which over time allows us to handle the difficult encounters with hard illusion with more grace and with more poise. Okay, let me guide you now into mindfulness. Sit quietly and close your eyes. After one good strong inhale and exhale, your body and mind join in a bond of consciousness. You are more engaged in the moment. This is a concrete form of presence. Now, just breathe naturally, following the rise and fall of your breath. Look within with the soft gaze of warm-hearted awareness. Do this for the next 30 seconds or so. Note when you feel judgmental of a thought or get carried away by a feeling that takes you from this firm yet gentle focus on the ascending and descending of your breath. Okay, open your eyes. Sit for a few seconds and rest in this appreciation of your own becoming that's hooking up the wires between your left and right brain, between your head and your heart. Once you are in presence, you can pause this lesson and continue your practice for 5, 10, or 20 minutes, setting your timer on your cell phone if you wish. And when you are finished, hit the play button again, and I'll lead you through a grounding and awakening exercise. Welcome back. A grounding exercise helps you transition back into the world of phenomenon with focus, with presence, and with mindfulness. Open your eyes. Still sitting or standing if you wish, place one palm of your hand over your navel area, and then the other palm over that one. In 3 breath cycles on the exhale, silently say to yourself, "Be." Then, "Here." And with the 3rd breath cycle, "Now." Let me give you an awakening exercise. An awakening exercise is the practice of a brief return to presence in the middle of our day, when most of us get lost in the host of dramas that pull us out of the now. Set your cell phone to ring you at a random moment today, and when it signals you, simply bring your awareness to your breath, following its rise on the inhale and its fall on the exhale. Do this 5 times, then say to yourself silently, "The most important act I am accomplishing is to accept, to center, and to trust." Then continue on with your day. Cultivate this practice of briefly returning to presence, and you will walk in your world with a much lighter step and a smile, ready and better prepared to lighten the hearts of others, thereby uplifting and improving to some degree the world around you.